It's time for the Midwest Outdoors with Fred Ramsey and Mark Tobin. Brought to you by Reed Chevrolet, the Hearing Connection in St. Joe, the Sports Medicine Store, and Sportsman's Outfitters and Marine. Now, here are Fred Ramsey and Mark Tobin.
Good morning, ladies and gentlemen. Welcome to another edition of the Midwest Outdoors. Tickle of death to be with you this Saturday and every Saturday. I hope. I am basking in the aura of my co-host, Mark C. here, Tobin, the greatest lawn person that ever walked the face of the earth. I'm not worthy, not worthy, oh, not goodness. Worthy.
Gag me.
Gag me? Gag me, Tobin? Yeah. And Mr. Thompson is here in the studio with us.
How you doing this morning, man?
Your car started and got you down here this morning?
I did. Okay. I did.
Throw that in.
Yeah.
He always shows off. He's got one of those remote starts, so he's always starting his car, you know, from inside the building.
Uh-huh. Does that impress you?
Yeah, that's pretty cool.
I was just wondering if they had a car wash at St. Joe.
They don't.
No. Yeah, his... Fred's truck is proof of that. Although you've been going up, working up at the duck club.
Yeah,
right?
Out in the real world in the mud and gravel and dirt. And someplace there is no gravel and dirt. It's just all dirt. Deal.
Yeah, that truck does get abused.
And it's, you know, it's gumbo.
No,
it's
yes.
The real gumbo. Oh. It's not the make-believe gumbo.
Yeah,
this is the real
right.
gumbo.
Right.
But, I gave away a hunt one time. I had Dr. da-da-da-da-da-da-da. And what the heck was his name? It's many years ago. And him and his son. And it was a charity deal. And anyway, he reached outside the edge of the blind, been raining, and he grabbed a handful of that gumbo, and he squeezed it, and he said, "Boy, this is good black dirt." I said, it's good and black. But that's about as far as it goes on this deal. And after about, about 30 minutes and 20 paper towels, he said, "How do you get this off your hand?" I said, "It'll wear off in about a week, 10 days. I mean, you can get in a shower with that gumbo on
that's
you.
That's nasty.
And scrub until your skin turns pink, but the dirt's still there.
Yeah, oh gosh.
It's just a
and
nasty
And how do you
product.
Grow anything in that?
You can't. I mean, you're not supposed to, you know. I can't grow anything this year anyway. I still got snow geese.
You were saying that before. I just, on
unbelievable.
Yeah, 40 acres, they probably ate 31 acres of it, something like that.
I mean, we're in June.
Yeah, and my theory is, and I don't know, I haven't talked to a snow goose for quite a while. I used to talk to him all the time, but back in the old days.
Yeah, I understand.
Hallucinogenic stuff.
Yes,
but
right.
Anyway, I'm, you know, they had the bird flu, and they claim maybe 35,000 died on the refuge, or 37, whichever guy you want to talk to. Some say less, some say more. But a lot of birds died. And those left over are what we call the sickos, and they're just not healthy birds. And there were several thousand of them over there. Mm. And, of course, I'm about the first field off the refuge that, you know, and when that corn sprouted, you know, when it got about an inch or less high coming out of the ground, boy, they just walk right down the rows and just gobble it and pull it right out of the ground.
How maddening.
Yeah, it really was. And what was weird about it is this has got a six-row planter. It's a 7,000 drive, drove, and driven, in case that ever comes up in conversation with you at a cocktail party.
Yeah, I remember that.
It might. You know, I never thought of that. But anyway, it's weird. Some rows, they really devastated. And, of course, some rows, they didn't. And I think the old planter just wore it. It's no wore-out planter like the guy running it. And I think that some of that seed was really accessible to get up because it was probably not too deep in the ground. And that you can tell which row, you know. And, of course, there's pilot air involved. I have to take the blame for a lot of it. I had the belt drives inside the planter, which you guys, it's like taking apart a Rolex watch in my mechanical skills. And two of those broke. Well, as you're going down the road of life and planting corn, and at 7,000, you don't have a window. You can't tell if the corn's going down. What you check do is you open the boxes, and you make sure it's all going down even at the same time. That's how you check it.
Very scientific.
Very scientific. And so being late and tired and dirty and wore out and riding that across that gumbo. I went home, got back up next morning, went back up there, and the boxes were uneven. So that told me, I said, oh, man. And the guy that I got the thing from was, he told me it had been completely rebuilt. Well, and I took the inspection plates off of it. The belts were broken. They were the original.
Oh, good gosh.
Belt. They got their money. I got my money's worth out of them, or he did, or whoever. But it's just an amazing. Whoever was smart enough to invent a 7,000 planter, I got to tip my hat to them. They're smart, man. And, you know, it's so precise, you know, they're putting on 17,550 kernels to an acre.
I mean, and you know that is exact, right?
Yeah.
It should be, right?
It should be when it's running right. But part of it wasn't running right. I had two belts off, and then I had probably something plugged up or something. And I think maybe my seed had gone south a little bit, but I don't know that. But anyway, I have to redo her again.
Wow.
So anybody wants to come up with about $1 million to help us out up there, we'd appreciate it. Wow. Terrible.
How frustrating.
Hey, shout out to our buddy Brent Frazee on his anniversary yesterday.
Oh, that's right, yeah. Because
for health reasons, he couldn't go fishing with me yesterday.
Yeah, it's his anniversary, better
not. Yeah, he said he was getting too old to crawl in and out of the doghouse.
Down on all fours, I think he'd be handy.
Well, he may be a little rotund to get through the door.
Yeah, right. I didn't say that.
Yeah, I didn't say that.
Brent,
he looks
great.
Like a buff god to me. Unbelievable. Brent is just such a good human.
He definitely is.
I just love it when we've got him come in the studio a couple times in his career. And I just, it's some of the best radio we ever do.
Yeah,
he is in here.
We've had some other writers that we've interviewed before, and that's why they write and they don't talk, because
yes,
they just don't come across very well. But boy, not Brent. He's got such a great sense of humor. The hard thing is trying to get him to shut up.
Oh, he's a wonderful human. I interviewed an outdoor writer one time. It was the longest half hour of my career.
Patrick McManus, same thing. Ooh. And I love his books. He's humor, writes humor, and did for Field and Stream and Sports of Field, and just so funny. And I loved his books. Could not wait to interview him, but he was one of those, you ask him a question, yep,
nope.
I mean, didn't expand on any question.
Well, I'll tell you how bad it was. It was back in the old KFQ days, if I remember correctly. If you don't have talking after so many seconds, it grabs it and inserts a commercial.
Oh, no. Really?
Oh, yeah. And I'd say, question, are the fish biting or whatever the question was. And he'd look around the room and up at the ceiling and down to his shoes and tie his shoes and wind his watch and count his change. And pretty soon he'd go, nope. And I mean, this, you know, you're nervous. Anyway, I don't care. Every time I do this radio show, I'm nervous when we start. Can't tell it, I hope. But, talk, say something.
Did a commercial ever start?
Yeah, you know, do something on this deal. You know, let's just don't sit around here, you know, on the deal. The people don't want to hear dead air, you know. So, what the hey.
Hey, got an interesting phone call last night. I talked to Mark about it from Dr. Paul Reese. They have got a place, and I called him on it to start out with. He says, we have got a place that no fishing lures have ever hit the water. There's nobody living on the river. And I'm like, come on, man. I've heard that too many times. I said, why? He said there was a 12-mile stretch of rapids, so it's not worth the indigenous people to get up there.
Mm-hmm.
And so he's taking exploratory trips up there now. Boy, what a fun time that would be.
God, can you imagine finding some place that's never been fished?
Big Lake.
Yeah, right up in St. Joe. Right?
St. Joe. Nobody wants to fish there.
No indigenous people up there.
They went, ooh, whoa, you surely wouldn't eat. Yeah, you know, that would be weird, wouldn't it?
He said that he and Wellington, I know both of them, had fished, the river's 270 kilometers long, and then there's one river that's 70 miles long that they fished 20 miles of it, and so there's still 50 miles. Nobody's been on, and another one that only goes up 10 miles, and then there's a waterfall, and he said they are going to go up above the waterfall and see if there's any fish, and if they are, they're going to build a portage.
Wow.
Really? Well, there'll be fish up there.
Well, you would think.
Yeah. Well, why wouldn't there be?
Don't have the knowledge you
when
have.
When the high water would get up, which, notorious, the fish would go up that thing, I would assume. Where is this exactly?
Well, it's up in the northeastern part of Brazil. Mark's been down there, up close to the Roraima State.
Hmm. Did you hear about the Brazilian Army? This was supposed to be a fact that they had a battalion of guys, and they gave them vitamins. And by accident, somebody gave them all Viagra. Seriously. That's supposed to be a true story.
So now they're hardened warriors?
No, I think they declared war on the Netherlands on the red light there. Isn't that weird?
Oh, my goodness. Yeah.
I wonder what happened. Wonder they all went, huh? Stand attention. Erection.
We're going to be in trouble again, Fred.
I'm getting to the age of 71 that I don't care anymore. You know? Everybody seems to be mad at me anyway, so what the hey, you know. Are the crappie done spawning?
Pretty much, but although, you know, even last weekend, the long weekend, I had several reports of people getting fish shallow, females that still had eggs in them.
Hmm.
So there may be a little bit still going on, but, you know, the ones that haven't dropped, sometimes you'll find them with eggs this time of year, and they just wind up absorbing them. They don't get rid of, you know, they don't drop them all at the same time anyway.
Yeah.
So maybe they got rid of some and still have some. But
do the crappie smoke a cigarette after spawning?
Is
that a fair question?
I would say probably that's not a fair question.
That's not a fair question. No. I bet they can't get their lighter to work.
That'd be you know, I've seen SpongeBob, and he can have fire underwater.
Oh, really?
So maybe.
My favorite show. Wow, he has terrible. The other day I watched him, he was in a leaking boat, you know, with a sponge. My goodness. You know what's going to do.
It just doesn't make sense, does it?
I had to turn it off and go, but I wanted to see the end of that, but it just, what the hey. We have to take a little bit of a break. We get to giggling here. We've got John Serta. If you guys are thinking about purchasing a dog or have a puppy or that kind of thing and you need a dog trained, this guy's the best, isn't he?
Yes, he is.
Isn't he a wonderful person?
I just love John Serta.
He's a great guy.
He knows his craft, too.
Oh.
Yeah. You know, he's something. I always felt bad about him talking to them dogs like that because dogs don't understand. But
with him, they do.
They might. I think he's hallucinogenic.
Well, there's.
I'm not sure whether he trains Fred or Baxter more.
Yeah, well, a little bit of both.
Yeah, Baxter's untrainable. Baxter's on the IR, guys.
Oh,
bad deal. Yeah, what? Tried to catch the pass in the end zone and trained the muscle.
trade him to Miami.
No, he cut his paw. Aww. He'll be all right, you know. Week 10 days, he's licking on it as we speak, I'm sure, in the deal. Hey, we got to take a little bit of a break. We are brought to you by King City Lumber, kingcitylumber.com. Marty and Monty Tunks, the finest humans to walk upright. I've seen them walk on all, get down on all fours, but these guys can walk upright too. They are the nicest people you've ever been around. So if you're needing an outbuilding, Blake's shaking his head. He doesn't think that they're nice people. What's the matter with you, Blake? Have you ever met him, Blake?
No, I've never met him in my life. I'm sure they're swell.
They're wonderful people.
Great people. Wonderful people.
They're from King City, Missouri. You can't get no better in King City. If you're Roger Worley, the All-Pro, Cardinals. Defensive back?
Totally. No.
Kansas City, Missouri. But anyway, well, let's get back to the subject here. If you're needing an outbuilding and a place for your pony or your doggy or your horsey, these are the guys to build it. You need a place for your combine, your tractor. You need a place for your mother-in-law. Here you go.
Brent Frazee, if he's in the doghouse.
Doghouse. He needs to go outside all
the
time.
That'd be a uptown living for him.
Yeah. But anyway, these are master carpenters. They're great people. Go to their website, kingcitylumber.com. You're going to love them. They're good, good people. They know how to do it. They have master carpenters, first-rate lumber. whatever you need done, they will do it. If you see something on their website and you go, I'd like to tweak this a little bit, they'll help you. They'll help you design it. KingCityLumber.com. Got to take a little break. We'll be right back with you. Back, ladies and gentlemen, you're listening to, I hope they're listening, the Midwest Outdoors, all three of our listeners. Mark, do you think we got three?
I think we've exceeded three. We might even be close to double digits.
Oh, come on.
I think so.
At this hour in the morning, city folk don't get up and move around, do they?
Yeah, but country folk can hear us.
Yeah, and speaking of country folk, well, we do have a lot of farmers, and I got a little shout out here. You know, this is they've been a sponsor now for a while, but Sure Ag, they're just good people. They were Sure Grow, and they got bought out. Basically, the managers bought Sure Ag as Savannah Osborne and Four City, Missouri, Rich Mendenhall, and the guys. I was in there yesterday and talked to them. I mean, these guys are the ultimate in pros. You know, it used to be, you know, the old adage when you were farming, they make every acre count. Now you better make every foot count because it is so expensive between diesel fuel, the chemicals, the seed has gone ballistic. Some of that's gone up 300%.
Wow.
These guys, between the three managers, got 115 years of doing this. So they are professionals. They are the best humans I've been around. So if you are farmers, which I guess we have an awful lot of farmers listening to our show, it's great. These are the guys you want to hire. I've been doing business with them for 15, 18 years. My brother retired there from Sure Grow. I can't say enough good things. I don't do them justice on this commercial. That's how good of guys they are. And, you know, and they care. Yesterday I was talking to them about coming up and spraying the Duck Lake. Well, it's impassable swamp. First thing out of their mouth was, well, we'll probably cut up your field. I said, well, I don't care. You know, there's the whole difference. But that's how, you know, these guys care. You know, they really want to do a professional job, and they will. They're the best. Sure Ag in Savannah, Missouri, Osborne, Missouri, and Four City, Missouri. And I like I said, I've been in business with them now for 15, 18 years. I wouldn't even think about anybody else. That's how good they are and how professional they are. Love these guys. So whatever you're looking for in a fertilizer, the accurate blending is a big deal, you know, now. And, well, always has been, but they take it to the extreme. There's nobody like them. I can't say I don't do this commercial good enough service. That's all it amounts to. It all amounts to. So next time or this time or when you got to spray your beans or come back and side dress your corn or whatever you got to do in the ag business, these are the guys you go to. Sure Ag, Savannah, Osborne, and Four City. You'd be tickled to death to do business with these guys. So what the hey.
Before, we've got Phil Taunton from What's an Outdoors Radio Show. He's got a couple of important things he's going to help promote. But real quick, before we get to Phil, Greg, you went fishing yesterday?
I went fishing yesterday with Toby leaving Dusky and out in Kansas. And the goal was to just – he was going to teach me how to catch only big crappie. And he's a tournament crappie fisherman. Mm-hmm. He did that. It was a little slow to start yesterday, but we probably caught 25 to 30 fish, and one of them was under a pound.
Wow.
And the majority of them were between a pound and a half and 2 pounds. If you get a chance to – absolute fishing guides, if you get a chance to go with this guy, he knows his stuff.
Does he? Absolute fishing guide? Is that
Absolute fishing guides. You can go to our website because we had interviewed him a few weeks ago, right. But he's just a heck of a nice guy.
I'm telling you, I've been calling him for my Friday evening fishing reports, and we wind up talking for an hour and a half, and sometimes not even about fishing. He's just a caring, good guy.
Oh,
really
cool.
One of the nicest guys I've ever met.
We need to get him back on air.
Yeah, really like to see him do good. He's quite an educator. And,
cool.
When we have more time, we'll talk about things that you found yesterday. But
what did he say about running the live scope?
he again, he was another one that said he sees some of the bigger fish, the bigger crappie being spooked, and he thinks it's by live scope. And I wish if people, I got no agenda. If you got a live scope, message us here at the station and let me know whether you all are seeing the same thing while you're running it. I don't know. I don't have one.
But now that's three or four guides that have said the same thing. That
would it be working on the bass the same way?
Oh, I'd have to. Any of the bigger,
I would think so, wouldn't it?
Any of the bigger fish seem to be more sensitive to it. But you know, I talked to Brian Andrake, a Kansas Angling Experience, and he doesn't see that so much. But he's fishing deeper, 20 and 30 feet deep, and
so that would make a difference. The power of the signal,
maybe. But he fishes a lot for hybrids. And like I said, he doesn't seem to see it like. But it's got to be real. I mean, too many guides have been mentioning this.
I wonder if it's the clarity of the water, that would have some make it easier to go. I suppose the signal will go through the water easier.
I fish Truman for those hybrids without it, and that's where he was telling me it affected him. And it was clear, stained. Yeah. Out there where I fished yesterday, it was muddy, so I fished two different water conditions.
Didn't
but
matter.
We weren't fishing in 30 feet of water either. That may have something to do with
were
it.
Were you in 8 foot of water?
We were fishing probably 15 feet of water and down 2/3 still all the way down.
Wow. Now, these crappie you caught yesterday, they are spawned out?
Yes. And,
they're done.
But, we were actually targeting big crappie, and you might only see one or two at a time. And we would literally go for that fish. It's just amazing.
Do you think it's hurting the resource?
No. I don't think you can catch enough crappie in most lakes to ever bring them back into balance.
Might be true.
You believe that too, huh? Yeah. Well, why do they have limits then?
Well, that's exactly why. You got to have some limits, and that's why they have a limit. As long as you're staying within that, then there shouldn't be a problem.
You know, they doubled the limit at Smithville, and look what's happening now. They're catching quality crappie.
Yeah.
They did, didn't they?
Yes, sir.
Yeah, I hear nothing but great reports out of Smithville.
Yep.
Huh.
Well, let's get to Phil. Yeah, Phil Taunton is joining us from What's in Outdoors Radio. Phil, what do you got going on, my friend?
Well, I was wondering what the weather is up your way, Mark.
It's partly cloudy. It doesn't look like it's going to rain. If it does, looks like it may hold off till this afternoon.
Well, as soon as I get off this phone with you, I'm going to be heading towards Topeka. And we've got a big event there at Ravenwood Lodge. It's the Justin Corbett Memorial Shooting Sports Foundation, Youth in the Outdoor Day.
Cool.
And it fits right on in with what the American Sports Fishing Association has going on in their National Fishing and Boating Week. And it goes from June 4th to June 12th. We also have our free fishing weekends here in Kansas, and anybody can go out and fish anywhere without a license. So some pretty cool things going on if you want to get into angling. But, of course, we talk about fishing, getting youth and families outside for a better insight. Wildlife and Parks here in Kansas on May 15th started the Great Kansas Fishing Derby. I was part of the Outdoor Communicators of Kansas Conference, and I was out on the lake here at Council Grove, the city lake, when they did their electroshocking to bring these fish up. We have probably about 13 to 15 fish in this little 430-acre impoundment, and three of them have been caught already. One of them that I sponsored, we named Dutch after an old catfishing friend of mine, and it was caught on the first day. Fred Bombas, you might remember Fred, his son Cliff fishes the tournament Frank Howestack property quite a bit, and he can tell you about the live scope property if you ever get him on the show.
Oh, yeah.
But he's caught two of them, so we're going to ban him from the tournament.
So these are
Phil, kick him out.
These are tagged fish.
These are tagged fish, and I did get a little video when Wildlife and Parks was shocking them because I talked with the biologists. I'm interested in what's going on down in the fishing world, and they shocked about a 25-pound buffalo. I've been coming down here since '58, and I never knew there was a buffalo in this lake.
Wow.
But that fish, he come up to the top, and when he got his wits together, he would have made a dolphin proud the way he took off on top of that water.
Yeah, they don't like that electro stuff.
There's about 40 impoundments in Kansas that have these fish, so if you catch them, there's all kind of different awards. Some of them is overnight stay at places. we give them $100 gift certificates to people that catch them. And so something to look into. Just go to KSOutdoors.com. It's called the Great Kansas Fishing Derby. I have my second annual Youth in the Outdoors event that I do here at Council Grove on the lake. It's our summer-long family fun fishing contest, and anybody can enter it. Last year we got an entry from Georgia. That was really cool, and all you need to do is kids 17 and under, catch a fish, take a picture of it, and send it to us via email, and we'll have a drawing. I'm working with Flint Hills Life Channel now, so I give the kids an opportunity to come onto the show and tell the story. That's pretty cool to have the excitement that I feel when they catch your fish and tell about it. Wow. So all I need is an email sent to me, and our email is youthfishingkansas@gmail.com. Of course, you can go to my Facebook page, Phil Taunton, and now these people have started their new Facebook page called Watson Outdoors with Phil Taunton. So we're getting the word out, trying to get families out, that we just feel that fishing is the glue that will bond families together in the future.
Well, we appreciate you trying to help with the youth especially. That's badly needed, so thank you for all that. And just one more time, how can people get more information to get their kids and family involved?
They can look at my Facebook page, Phil Taunton, or they can go to Watson Outdoors with Phil Taunton.
Okay.
Facebook. Just look at that. I do have a quick Brent Trezee story for you, if you got a minute.
Sure.
I'll tell you, we had quite a memorial weekend down here, and we did a youth event, too. And I had to go on a couple of bait runs just because we couldn't keep up with the sunfish and the worms. The catfish have really been going crazy here at the reservoir, but generally, when I get on the road and I knew it was Brent's anniversary, I give him a call, and he answered. And just like that, I went over a little hill, and he was gone. And so I was driven to Minnesota Bates. What a great place there in Kansas City. Good people to deal with.
Yeah, it is.
But anyway, when I got on top of the next hill, I called Brent, and he answered. And he said, "Goodness, Phil, I never thought we'd talk long enough for me to make you mad." But no, Brent, you got to love them, guys. I love your show. Have a good weekend, and let's get those kids out there fishing. I'm going to Ravenwood today, and we'll probably have 300, 400 kids out there.
Oh, cool. Awesome. Well, that's great. Well,
that's
good
great.
For you. Well, thank you, Phil. Thanks for all you do, buddy.
Appreciate you.
We'll talk again.
Hey, before we take this break, Joe Falco got boats?
Yeah, I still got a few. They're in short supply right
they
now,
are,
but
aren't they?
He's hoping to get some more later this summer. But the repair business is good, and people are
sure.
keeping their boats longer now because it's hard to find a new one. And so Dave Hemme, he's the head mechanic out there, and there's just, you know, he's a magic man. There's just nothing that he can't figure out, and no problem that he can't solve. So if you have a boat, eventually you will have to have a service. So there's nobody better to take it to.
A broken boat?
Sportsman's out there. Yeah. But they're out in Belton, the last Belton at the Cass Road exit. They're on the west side of 49 Highway. Good bunch of folks out there to do business with. Sportsman's Outfitter and Marine.
We got to take a little break, ladies and gentlemen. When we come back, we're going to have John Serta maybe help you train that noble steed that you've been feeding in the backyard. You're listening to the Midwest Outdoors. We'll be right back with you. Ladies and gentlemen, you're listening to the Midwest Outdoors, and by the magic of the telephone, we're going to one of my bestest friends, if he's not my bestest friend. John, is there such a word as bestest?
In your vocabulary, yes.
There can be.
It can be. Bestest.
Works for me.
Professional bird dog, well, professional dog trainer. I should always get locked in on bird dogs, but John can train about any dog. But John Serta is with us. John, I always start every interview with the same question. Have you been bitten today?
Well, Fred, I knew you would ask that question, so I have a story for you. Buddy, let me tell you. I had a 55-pound blue heeler come in for training.
Ooh.
And he had some issues. Let's just put it this way.
Like my co-host has issues.
Yeah. Well, normally, as you know, when we get a new dog in, I like to sit in my big, fat, easy chair, let the dog get used to me, you know, no aggressive posture, just sitting down, everybody's relaxed and talking. And I could tell right off that this dog's gonna be a challenge. And so I had my assistant, Megan, my assistant trainer, just start to walk this dog around the table there, just to get him used to everything. And as the dog goes by the owner, the sucker bit him right on the stomach.
Oh!
I looked at him. I said, "He just get you?" Yeah. Oh, wow. So he walks by me, nails me on the foot. Second time he comes by me, nails me on the foot. Of course, I had my boots on, you know, but that's still kind of.
Yeah.
Anyway, long story short is about the 10th time this dog bit me, and I'm talking through my protective gear and everything. I said, "Yeah, sorry, bud, you got to go home."
Wow. Nothing you can do with a dog like that?
Well, sure. But it's going to take time. Here's the deal. In order to get them out and work them, you got to be able to put the collar. We use a leather force collar here. Slip that over their head, but that's when he would get me. As soon as I would reach down, get close to his head, wham!
Wow.
And I'm talking, Fred, you know I've been doing this a long time, and I'm usually prepared, but my reflexes just were not fast enough for it. And Megan would look at me like, "Are you going to take that?" And lucky for the dog, she was standing there, because I probably would have had a little bit of a conversation with the dog. Anyway, so there's my dog bite story for the morning.
Well, you know, my co-host tries to bite me every Saturday morning. I don't understand.
Well, so you just quit trying to put that collar on.
Yeah. I tolerate him in here. He licks himself in weird places, you know, and I go, "Case, yeah, Mark, you know, good thing it's in live TV. This is kind of embarrassing, you know." And then my producer.
I think he's asleep.
I think he's crashed me. You know, my producer. He's kind of the same mode, you know, he'll bite himself, you know. Hey, here's the scenario, and we've talked about this over the years, but you get to somebody, you answer an ad in the paper, and they got 8 lab puppies, and they're all cute and fuzzy and warm and giggly and want to lick you and bite you a little bit and, you know, all fun and games. How in the world do you pick out a dog out of a litter of 8?
Well, you know what? There is an art to it, and the best thing a person could do is just do a lot of research. Start making a list for yourself what it is that you're going to be doing with that dog. If it's a pet, it's one thing. If it's a field trial type dog, it's one thing. And if it's going to be a hunting type dog, it's another thing. So if you know what you want to do with it, then you can start looking for characteristics that a pup would start showing at a fairly early age, and then, you know, check them out. One of the things we always tell people to do is just go look at the dogs in a bunch and see if they're interacting. You know, clap your hands, see which one perks up and looks at you and maybe comes to you, or you clap your hands and it runs off and hides in the corner. Well, I mean, it's pretty simple when you see something like that happen. But there's lots of other little things that you can look at to kind of help get yourself ready to pick the right one. But a lot of the times I like to tell people that if you have a good personality and you're showing that, the dog's going to come to you. You know, just like Harry Potter, the wand chooses the wizard type. And same way with the pups. You know, they'll come to you. They'll warm right up to you.
You know, when I was a kid, I would talk to the old timers that had dogs. Of course, we had a lot of coon dogs and bird dogs and a little bit of everything. But they'd always say when they get a pup, they'd look inside their mouth, and they had black inside their mouth. That's the one they wanted to take home. Do you think there's any validity to that?
Not really.
Have you heard that before?
Really. Well, sure, I've heard it. But, you know, chows have black mouths. They can't all be good. As a matter of fact, those will bite you quicker than anything. But there's lots of little things that you can do to help pick a dog.
You know, this dog's weaned. You finally pick one out of the litter. What's step A? I mean, where are you going from here on out?
again, it depends on what type of dog it is, but most dogs, I'm going to say the first thing you're going to do is put a collar on them. You know, I'm talking 6, 8, 10-week-old pup, just little puppy collars, and let them scratch at and get used to that. And then I start letting them drag a little stiff, short piece of rope so they get used to that little tug on their neck. And from there, you're going to just walking them, letting them fight against it, you know, howling and screaming. But eventually, they're going to get over it.
Mm-hmm.
And just start walking them. Get them used to you being in control with that rope. Because that's what's all going to come down to, Fred, is if you don't take control of that pup at a young age, I guarantee you that they will try and take control as they get older, because dogs are pack animals, and they're always going to be trying to be in charge of the pack. So while you got a hold of that rope, and you're saying, we're going this way, no, we're going this way, well, that's how you start them out, just like that.
Hmm. Yeah, I live in a cul-de-sac type area, and when I come home some days, and there'll be some poor little girl with a lead, and the dog's dragging her down the street.
Yep.
And it just bothers me. You know, why would you let your dog do that to you?
Well, a lot of them just don't know any better, Fred. I mean, I'm the same boat. As a professional trainer, my eyes just automatically lock on things, you know. And their dogs are just mistreating their owners, and they don't have any clue on what they should be doing. I can't train them all, Fred, but I do feel sorry for the ones that I can't train. So,
yeah,
I do what I can do.
Do you think you got any hope to train Mark Tobin?
Sure.
Do you have to?
All he's got to do is take me fishing, and I'll train him for free.
There you go. That's fair trade.
Would I require a shock collar?
Oh, I got many. Lots of them.
Okay, so I got a big question for you. Hunting dog, non-hunting dog, is it bad to give a dog a treat for no reason?
Eh, not really. Not really. Just don't want to give them too many treats, so they get fat on you.
Well, I understand, but go ahead.
But generally, in our training program, the only time we're going to give dogs actual treats that they can eat is when we're going through the force fetch program, and that is basically just so that we can speed things up, and the dog sees that if he does this particular function correctly, here's your treat. And then, of course, we wean them off of those. I want a dog that you're going to pat on the head, good boy, you know, that type of thing. Let him figure out that this is his treat for doing something that we ask him to do, rather than giving him food. So that's just the way we do it.
Yeah, you briefly mentioned force fetch, and we've talked about that on the air, and I've had people say, well, that's cruelty to animals. That's not nice. I mean, tell them about how you do that, John.
Well, there are I could tell you stories about trainers that you don't want to hear, but there are several different methods of force fetching. Some people use them fairly painful, I don't know, methods. But with us, we, as you know, and I tell you this every show, that we believe in repetition and association for training dogs. Rather than applying a lot of pain to a dog, basically to get it open its mouth up and take whatever it is you're using to train him with, whether it's a bumper or a canvas bumper or a wooden dowel, things like that, we just physically open their mouth up, put it in, and tell them to hold it, teach them to hold it, and then drop it on command, and it all goes downhill from there.
Mm.
But, yeah, there's some stories I could tell you that why people would be a little leery, but I guarantee you that, and I get in trouble when I know other trainers talk about me, but I'm not going to talk about them. But I do this particular method, and it works. And I don't have to apply all some of the barbaric old-time trainers' methods, and that's why we get quite a few people up here wanting to get their dog force-fetched. So the owners are involved with all the steps of force-fetching. They'll see themselves how to do it in case I'm not there to help them, and things just go better at home when they know what they're doing.
Hmm. Hey, John, we're talking to the best dog trainer in the galaxy, John Serta. When it comes...
Galaxy?
Okay, the world.
Okay, all right.
But I don't know anybody better. But when it comes to coming in contact with a strange dog, you know, whether it's at a friend's house or if you're out for a walk and a dog approaches you, can they sense fear? What's the best way to approach a strange dog?
Well, that's
a strange, strange question. But the strange dogs I try and kind of steer away from. But seriously, you just have to be careful. They can definitely sense fear, whether it's through your body language, and most of the time that's what it's going to be. Sometimes people say they can smell the fear. I don't know. But if you're acting afraid, boy, they can really, really key in on that. And now they say, okay, I got you dominated, buddy. But I have literally walked into barking pens with pit bulls and Rottweilers and Dobermans and just bluffed them, you know. But I've done it for so long, I know what to do.
Yeah.
But if you're showing fear, they'll pick up on it and they'll bark at you and everything. But most of the time, if a dog's going to bite you, as you guys know, it's going to be out of fear. And then it happens so fast, whoo. Yeah. I mean, you better have really fast reflexes.
Well, that comes back, like your skills, you can read that dog, can't you? I mean, that's you've learned that over your generation here, haven't you?
Well, you know, if you can't read a dog, it's going to be hard to train a dog. I, you know, if anybody wants to look at my website, they'll see it written right on there. It's no big secret. If you can read a dog's temperament, just body language, there's lots and lots of stuff that you can look at a dog. Just like we talked earlier about picking that pup. A lot of things that you can see in that dog that's going to tell you something. And if you can, I tell people this all the time. If a dog's wagging his tail, is he happy? Well, we don't know for sure. Uh-huh. But I'll tell you what, a dog can wag his tail in many ways. And if you know some of the ways that a dog wags his tail and what it means, sure is a lot easier when you got to do the training part of it. So there you go.
Should you pet him on the head?
I avoid that. A lot of times if you put your hand over a dog's head, he's going to duck his head and think, oh, this guy's going to get me. So I try and, you know, do the normal, put your hand out in front, let him sniff it, and just kind of, if you can, just kind of reach down and pat him on the back just a little bit, and then you can slide your hand up and pat him a little bit. But by then he's going to say, okay, this guy's not going to kill me. So, but, yeah, avoid those strange dogs, too. Yeah, and you can tell. If they're freaking out, just don't even bother. Not worth it.
Hmm. What percentage of dogs are just worthless? I mean, you see them every once in a while, and you know, here's what happens. You know, the family gets attached to this wore out dog, and he's like a member of the family, and the dad wants to take him hunting, and this dog just hasn't got it. I mean, is it a very small percentage?
It really is. Most dogs can be worked into a family type setting with enough work. The dogs so far, and I've only had to send home, you know, three or four dogs. And how many years have I been doing this? 45 years, maybe more.
Hmm.
Most of them can be helped. Some of them can turn into great dogs. Some of them just going to be average dogs. But still, it's better than having a washed out dog.
Mm-hmm.
So percentages are there if you want to put in the work on the dog.
Do you, I don't know how to put this in a question form, but are you afraid of or have concerns in regards to Chesapeakes?
Well, you know what? This goes back to the biting. It goes back to the breeding. It goes, there's lots of reasons that I'm just a little leery of Chesapeakes. But, you know, their reputation, as they say, precedes them. So if you expect it, and even I, if I'm just a tad fearful of them, they'll pick up on that. But they're not my favorite breed. So there's lots of other choices out there. But we've trained many, many Chesapeakes, and some of them are just sweet as can be. But then again, there's those other ones that you got to watch those fingers. Count your fingers when you're done, you know.
They like eating fingers. It tastes tasty
well,
to them.
Yeah, you know. I've lost a pair of drawers or two over those guys. Yeah. So,
you know,
rip me right now.
You know, unless you're a real hardcore hunter, Chessies are tough, man. I mean, you can go out there at 10 below zero and they're panting. You know, they're just.
Oh, my gosh.
Yeah, and that's their cup of tea. But, you know, if you're going to get a family dog, yeah, that's probably about the last decision I would make would be a Chesapeake. You know?
Right. Right. Well, there's a lot of other breeds that I'm not real big on. But, you know, again, you got to figure out what it is you want that dog to be. Family dog, hunting dog, a lot of stamina, a lot of drive. But you know, there are pros and cons and everything that you look at. So,
well,
anyway,
I got a good compliment on you here a while back. A gentleman from Iowa, you trained his dog. I think Jerry Logson brought the dog with the buddy down, and boy, I guess you that dog is just lights out. And I've got to go hunting with this dog. I guess it's an honor to be in the field with this dog. That's how good it is. Do you remember this dog?
I probably do. I trained a lot of them from Iowa.
Boy, I'm blank with his name. I'm old and forget things. But,
yeah, well, I know exactly who you're talking about. He is I could describe him on the air, but that wouldn't help people figure out who he is. But and the dog was kind of skinny too. And again, you know, that comes down to your breeding, your a lot of stuff. When dogs come in there, they're all excited and they're going to lose weight. There's things that you need to do, like in the summertime, as far as how much to feed them in the heat and stuff like that to keep weight on them. And anyway, but yes, I know exactly who it is you're talking about.
Have you ever seen a bird dog, I classify as a bird dog, pointer, lab, whatever, that's scared of birds?
Sure.
Why?
Sure.
Do you know why?
Well, again, genetics. It's just some dogs are just flinchy. And when I say flinchy, I mean a sudden noise, sudden movement, and they get startled easily. This has happened many times. But for instance, walking up the gravel drive, getting ready to load a dog onto the truck, and there's a plastic trash bag sitting there. The wind blows it, the motion, and it's just like a horse bolting. Something in the dog is just real fearful. And those kind of dogs, you got to be careful. But they can be helped, you know, just by repetition association and letting them know that nothing's going to hurt them through conditioning. So it's all down to proper conditioning.
Hey, John, whether it's a bird dog or a house dog, what's the best way to discipline your dog when you're trying to train it?
Well, you know, I'm not a real physical type person, and I don't believe you need to do that with a dog. Some dogs, you got to get them by the leash, give them a little shake, you know. But most dogs are going to respond to voice. Mm-hmm. You know, you're growling at a dog, you know, you dirty, rotten. They can tell just by the tone of your voice that you're not happy with them. But no, I don't believe in hitting the dog, kicking the dog, yanking the dog around too much. But I like to look them right in the eye because they don't like that eye contact and use a rough voice, maybe shake them by the collar a little bit. That should be about all you need to do for disciplining a dog. But if a dog wants to be on your team, you shouldn't have to do a whole lot of that. But if you don't want to be on your team, well, now it's a whole different issue.
Hmm. Well, you know, the hardest part, there comes a point where this dog's just not going to do it. You know, there's some dogs.
That dog won't hunt,
and the family's bonded to the dog, and here you are, you're going to feed this dog for the next 7, 8, 9, 10 years, and, you know, I just, you know, that's a hard decision to make, you know. It's crazy, you know.
I have seen, Fred, that, as you know, we talk about hacking a lot, but I have seen dogs that were going to be washed out. And some dogs are just good right off the bat. Some of them take a little bit of training, like Megan, my assistant trainer now. She's really getting big into the field trial stuff. And we've had a good spring, as a matter of fact. We've trained and titled 5 dogs so far this spring and going for...
Wow.
Master Hunter this fall on a bunch of them. And, of course, I tell you what, there's some work involved with that, too. She's a hard worker, and she's not afraid to get in all the weeds and the poison. Of course, she has the ticks to prove it, too. But, I mean, even the dogs that don't look like they're going to do good, if you stick with them and work with them, you can get some pretty good results. I mean, Hackett, you remember him?
Oh, yeah.
We worked him and worked him, and by golly, that sucker had trophies all over the place when he got done with him, so don't give up.
That gentleman that we were talking about, Dave Feedback, I think his name was.
That's the one.
So anyway, he must be listening in Iowa, so Just got a text from him on the damn thing. John, we're out at radio time. You're
I got to leave John with one quick thought. Uh-huh. There was a dog and a cat arguing about who's most popular with humans. The dog said, well, it's obviously dogs. They named a very important body part after us, canine. And the cat just laughed and said, you ain't going to win this argument.
Oh, yeah.
Oh.
Moving right along.
It's been nice. It's been nice being here on the air for quite a while. My goodness. Tobin, you take your show off in the ditch, man. We're doing fine. We're bumping down the road. Everybody's happy, you know. Okay, John, how do they get a hold of you?
816-726-6145. 816-726-6145. That is my personal cell phone, www.thegundog.com. thegundog.com.
We're out of radio time. Thanks, sir.
You got it.
All right, buddy. Good talking
to you, John. Hey, I saw you up in St. Joe, Missouri.
I was, and I couldn't be more happy. You know, my son has a Chevy Silverado, and he has problems with the air conditioner. We've got a couple of mechanics that live next door to my mm-hmm. house and one next door to my business, and they couldn't work on it because it's too new. It's 2017, and these air conditioners require some. And I have resisted going to car dealerships because I've got screwed by them so many times. Every car dealer until Reed that I've gone to, they overcharge, they do things that weren't necessary. And so I was a little apprehensive, but I talked to you about this, and the Reed family, you can just trust them. They are good people. And I talked to, what's his name?
Joe.
Up there in the service department. And I could tell just from the first time I talked to him, this was going to be a different experience. So I'm telling you what, we got up there, we went ahead and drove up from Grain Valley to St. Joe. And got the air conditioner fixed, and it was half of the estimates that we got.
There you go.
This was going to be, we were afraid it was going to be anywhere from $2,500 to $3,500. It was $1,600 to get this fixed.
Yeah.
Unbelievable. I can't say, you know, we've talked about what a pleasant experience it is to buy a vehicle up there. But the service, we don't talk enough about the service. But I'm telling you, they you can trust them.
We do these commercials for Reed for a long, long time, and I can't do it justice. That's how good of people they are.
I'm telling you, I'm so impressed.
There's nothing like this family. And there's a bunch of Reed dealerships around Kansas City now, and they treat you all the same. You can't believe it. I've got some stories I could tell about the Reed family, but they don't want me to because they've done things that are just wonderful.
So generous. Yep.
So generous and so kind. And so if you're in the mode, this is Chevrolet at I-29 Reed Chevrolet up in St. Joe, Missouri on Frederick Avenue. Tell you what, that wraps it up for this edition of the Midwest Outdoor. This hour goes by too fast.
Way too fast.
Yeah. We need to go to 2. Let's go to 2. What do you say?
Oh, yeah.
Got to go for this week. Next time we see ya. I hope we see you in a great outdoors.
Have a great week. Thanks for coming in, Greg.
Oh, thanks. I enjoy it.